Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hey, before we get the show started, I wanted to let you know we are giving away a bunch of brand new Black Magic gear.
Yeah, cameras, switchers, DaVinci Resolve licenses, a bunch of awesome stuff. So stay tuned to learn how you can enter to win free gear from Black Magic, and we're going to tell you all about it later on in this episode. Now cue the music. Hey guys, welcome to the 93rd episode of Just Shoot It, a podcast about filmmaking, storytelling, and directing. I'm Oren Kaplan.
And I'm Matt Enlow. Today we've got Carlin Hudson back on the podcast. She's going to talk to us about her second year in Los Angeles. She's made a ton of huge strides and big leaps, and I think it'll be interesting for people who are curious about what her roadmap was in particular, and also her roadmap in particular. I think it's kind of a textbook version of what you can expect from a director who's got a solid body of work under her belt, but also is looking to kind of make it in Los Angeles, what that second year looks like.
Yeah, we had a really good chat with her. We debated a lot of things, and we also answered some listener questions. So stay tuned, and we hope you enjoy the show. But before we get to our talk with Carlin, we are going to read an iTunes review. We love reviews, as we've mentioned many times. If you want thousands of people to hear about your opinion, your project, anything, write a review for us and we will read it on the podcast. So this review comes from Lionel K. He says, thoughtful filmmaking podcast from two working directors. Another listener fooled. An excellent podcast from two directors working hard in Hollywood. Oren and Matt do a great job of letting us into their world by sharing their experiences, processes, aspirations, and occasional anxieties. The guests are excellent. I always get a lot out of this podcast, and I'm sure you will too. This is an unpaid endorsement. Unpaid endorsement.
Bam, 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 bam.
Proof that Lionel has listened to an episode all the way till the end.
Hey, well done. Thanks, Lionel. We really appreciate it, and it really helps the show grow. So thanks for sending us that wonderful review.
Yeah, I think I've heard, we've gotten feedback a lot of times that like our troubles in the job are just as interesting as like our successes. So I think hopefully we're giving people an accurate picture of what it's like to be a filmmaker in LA.
Highs and lows, guys. Highs and lows.
Yeah.
Oren, do you remember that on a recent episode, we both pledged to rate or to leave an iTunes review ourselves onto a different podcast?
I do remember that.
And you're laughing because you had such a good time. You just went hog wild and you reviewed a bunch of different podcasts. That's what I'm picking up on, right?
Yeah. What's crazy is like I wanted really meaningful reviews. So I just started doing like a lot of research on the podcast makers of the podcasts that I wanted to review. And I'm still kind of, you know, in the middle of a few drafts of reviews. So
sure, sure, yeah.
I haven't posted them yet, but I'm going to post them very soon.
I'm waiting for notes on mine as well. Yeah, so I guess that's a way of me saying next episode.
Yes.
We're definitely going to do it. And also, I guess I get it, you know, it feels weird. You're never like listening to a...
Yeah, you're listening, you're driving in your car right now. You're listening to this podcast. You're hitting the skip forward 15 seconds because I don't want to hear Matt and Oren talking about iTunes reviews.
Keep your hands on the wheel, guys. We get it, but also it'd be really helpful. So thanks, guys.
Yes.
Let's have our conversation with Carlin.
Hey, guys. We are here with Carlin Hudson, our friend / former guest / director.
How many episodes is this for you?
This is my second.
Is that only your second?
Yeah.
Yeah, but we've... Oh. Carlin is in a director's group with us, so...
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess I see you more than... Most of the time, I just see people on the podcast, or
have coffee, and we live down the street from each other.
That's true.
I think you've come to some of Matt's parties. If you want to meet the movers and the shakers in L.A., go to one of Matt's parties.
There you go, guys. Or a party.
Or any party.
Any party.
Or just move to L.A.
Yeah.
You guys have seen La La Land, right? It's all like that.
I was... watching this thing on, have you heard of Film Courage on YouTube?
Mm-mm.
It's like a channel that has like 42 tips to make your script not suck or whatever from professional
Send
writers.
Send it my way.
A lot of them talked about like that moving to LA is a transition that's like a part of your career. So Carlin, for the newer listeners, when you were on last time, you had kind of recently moved here from Austin,
mm-hmm.
Texas. And how's it going? How's LA treating you?
It'll be 2 years in February, right?
Yeah, full time 2 years in February because I split my time at first.
Mm-hmm.
So I call.
You,
I might
you
even
cross-faded
call it
in.
I did. I hardcore cross-faded in. I was slow to leave Austin. It's just hard to leave a town when you're like a big fish in a small pond and everyone knows you. And I had a career there, and it's been. I'm starting to love LA, which is great.
Yeah, 2 years, right? That's what it takes.
I say three.
I think three, because I call it 2.5 since I like lived. But, you know, I'm still meeting people. I don't have the same number of contacts here. I'm not working as steadily here yet. So it's been, you know, it has been easy.
Going to college in a town and then sticking around and building your career there, there are distinct advantages to that for sure. Just like, you know, growing up with people, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Those bonds are hard to reestablish when you move, for sure.
Yeah, but it's kind of like, but I was in Austin, you know, over the break, and kind of came to the realization, I was like, part of me misses it, but I'm like, what would I be doing in Austin? The same shit I was doing when I lived there, but I want to do more, so you move. So
right.
It's like, anytime I get sort of like, romanticize my career in Austin, I'm like, well... this is what I have to do, and it's uncomfortable at times, but it's for the best.
And not to mention that you could easily do a job in Austin.
This past year, I've been kind of out of the loop with that.
Interesting.
Because I've been up for jobs in LA and not as many in Austin, which was strange.
Because I think last time you were on the show, you were in that situation where you were getting more jobs than ever Austin because
mm-hmm.
now, like, you were a little, like... fancier, right?
Totally.
Right. It's like our Austin director is now in LA, but she'll do us a favor if it's the right fit, the right project, she'll come back for it.
Totally. But now it's a little bit, I used to get lots of little directing jobs, just kind of like random, mm-hmm.
Right.
Whatever.
Can you shoot this thing on Thursday?
Yeah. And now I'm not getting those calls anymore. And so I've directed less stuff this year because of that, mm-hmm. this past year, 2017.
Yeah. But that is, do you think, Matt, especially if you're doing commercials, which is a lot mm-hmm. of what you do, Carlin. Like, the more professional you get, the less shooting days you have.
Maybe so. And, like, I do feel like I've leveled up to some degree. And, I've been up against you guys for jobs. And it's, like, great to be at that level. But at the same time, I'm like, oh, yeah, where are those little one-day jobs where I get paid, like, $1,000 to show up and do nothing? And, you know, I don't get those anymore.
You know, it's funny. I don't think that I'm getting them as much either. And I wonder if maybe part of it is that the business is, that part of the business is fading away a little bit. You know,
mm-hmm.
I think that companies are consolidating, or maybe that experimentation phase for like brands where like, it's like, oh, should we try some branded content?
Mm-hmm.
Now they're like, yes. And it's getting more expensive.
I don't know if it's like that here, but in Austin, what was happening was I was losing out jobs to DP directors left and right.
Yeah,
and
sure.
I don't
shoot. Person that has their own camera.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, yeah. They pay that person, you know, rate and a half, and then they're saving half a rate.
Or just one rate.
Or just one rate. Woof.
Yeah.
Right.
And they have a camera, you know.
Yeah.
Well,
and
I
they
think,
can direct well enough, you know?
Yeah.
Just throwing out a random theory that I haven't thought about at all, but do you think there is, like, you know how there's always this, like, growing disparity between the rich and the poor? Like, it seems like what you're saying, Matt, there's really small projects and there's bigger projects, but that middle ground is kind of faded away. Like, people aren't making that, like, $30,000 video anymore, you know?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's true certainly for music videos,
mm-hmm.
right?
No, but even, like, a small startup wants to make a video for their app.
I made a ton of
$30,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like
spots.
Little or regional mm-hmm. things or something local, or like, hey, my grandma has like this business that she wants a commercial for.
Yeah. I mean,
I think probably a little bit. And I think also we're just kind of, you know, our rates are too high now, basically.
But right? It's funny because like there's times when I'm like, I'll do it.
You know sure, I mean? Sure. But like, I'll take it. Candidly, how much were you making on a $30,000 spot?
10%.
Yeah. Well, yeah, there you go. Because I feel like I could imagine a world where someone's like, yo, we've only got 30,000, we've only got 50,000. And they pay you less than 10% for sure.
Yeah.
And then it's like, when you're young and hungry, you're like, yeah, for sure. And certainly, you know, if it's a slow season and you're not doing anything and you haven't been outside in a while, you say yes to that stuff. But I think that people tend to ask us a little bit more because we're up for bigger, better jobs.
Yeah. You know? Yeah, it's funny. Like, people are like, why are you doing so well in LA? And you're almost like, I'm doing fine. I feel like I'm doing fine. But it's like, it's amazing what social media does. And like, you can put forth this...
Sure.
This image of yourself, which is not, I'm like, I get rejected all the time. You know, I yeah, can't sure. tell you how many
but
times they are rejected.
For better things.
But for better things, that's yeah. true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
My wife is always telling me that I need to, like, work on my Instagram account to put out, like, this, like, to give people an idea of what I'm interested in, what I do. And, you know, Blake and I, our friend, we always talk about how you and Matt Enlow and Matt Pollock are really good at Instagramming, like, set photos, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Peter Atencio, Key and Peele. Yeah. That dude is the best at it.
I have to follow him.
It's like, it's a real treat. Yeah. Like, yeah, it's especially almost, when you're doing sketch comedy and it's yeah. like people are doing crazy costumes and stuff yeah. all the time.
It's almost yeah. worth like taking like 10 awesome photos on set and releasing them like one a week, right? Until yeah. you get yeah, your next yeah. gig so that it looks like you're busy. There is this really weird thing yes. in Hollywood that people want to book people that are working.
Yeah, a friend of mine was like talking about wanting this writing job and was like, they know I need a job. I'm like, and that is why you're not getting yeah, it.
Exactly.
You yeah. have to act like you don't yeah. need the job.
Yeah. The worst answer to an interview question of like, what have you been working on lately is, well, you know, it's been kind of slow, so I'm really hoping I get this job.
It's yeah. so funny. I feel like I'm so spacey. Like, I could literally have just wrapped something incredible like 2 days prior. And if I'm interviewing for a job, I'll be like, you know, it's been cool. Things have been good.
I will say I'm in this zone right now where I'm working on like 4 different things. And because of that, I kind of feel like I'm not working on anything. You know?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah.
I mean, and Matt has like 100 projects. You probably have a bunch of things going too. But it's like, it's just hard to...
I wrote some stuff.
It's so much easier yeah. to be like, I'm on an average Netflix show and we're writing every day. You know?
Is that something like tangible that you can understand really easily rather than like, I'm developing 6 things
yeah,
and
yeah.
pitching 2. And
yeah. Well, so you got a new manager recently.
Yes. November.
November. So kind of...
So pretty recent.
Pretty recent.
At the end of the year.
It was so recent.
Yeah.
As everything's wrapping up,
mm-hmm.
you got some representation.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like it's going well. It was one of those meetings with her. Her name's Corinne at Rain Management Group. And it was just one of those meetings where I was like, oh, she really gets me. Like, she understands the kind of stuff I want to make. She, you know, seems to dig my stuff. And, like, I don't know. It was really cool.
How did you meet Corinne?
So I have a friend who's in development at Berlanti Picture Productions. You know what Berlanti is?
Yeah, he does all the CW
shows. Yeah, they do Riverdale, actually. And
Flash, Arrow.
Yeah, tons of stuff. And Pan, the hit movie Pan. And the big, whatever, production company. And he was kind of like, you don't have a manager yet? And I was like, no, I haven't really sought one out. And he was like, okay, you're going to get a manager. And so he set me up on all these meetings.
Oh, cool.
Oh, it was crazy. Yeah. I think he was on a desk at ICM.
Got
or
it.
Something.
So he has a relationship with those people.
Yes. Yeah. So I had all these meetings that he set up.
Were you privy to what he sent those managers to set up the meetings?
Not really. I sent him some stuff, but I don't quite know what he sent.
Like, did he send them your website, do you think?
I think he sent them like my website, but also I feel like I need to redo my website, frankly. But sort of like specific links and
mm-hmm.
Maybe a little explanation?
I wonder, I think that maybe at a certain point, it starts looking unprofessional again to have a website, you know, studio level, basically. Like, none of those fuckers are, like, on Squarespace, you know what I mean? If right. they've got a website, it's, like, much more about their personal brand. And, like if you go on the Soderbergh's website, it's awesome,
well,
but it's, like... We like set diaries and like auctioning photos, and he has like
he's selling things on his website.
Yeah, yeah.
That bums me out.
Well, they're super cool income. Though. They're all exposure tests. So it's like he'll have like a Polaroid from something and it's super dope.
And I went, okay, I do want to buy one, yeah. But it still bums me out.
Yeah, you're like, oh man, I wish we had to do exposure tests,
yeah,
right?
Like,
But, you know, commercial directors all have, like, you know, the biggest commercial directors, whether it's their own site or the production company's site. I mean, the biggest commercial directors usually own the production company, so it's kind of their site anyway.
Right.
And since we all deal with that, we need the sites.
Oh, yeah, it helps.
But, you know, for your manager is, like, theatrical, right? Or, like, TV, film, digital.
Yeah, I don't think that those guys tend to have narrative.
Right. That's the IMDb page, right?
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Kind of, yeah.
I do go to meetings, you know, when they're like, oh, we watched your movie. I'm like, what? They say you might feature, you know. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. I have no idea what they send people.
Boy, being in development, those fuckers have so much homework.
Yes.
They're watching and reading constantly.
Usually I'm like, you didn't watch my feature. So this one guy, I was like, oh, cool. What's your favorite part? I was just so done. I was like, this is so stupid. He went on like a rom-com. He's like, so you have rom-coms? And I was like, no, I don't have rom-coms. Like, why am I here? You know? And he was like, I said, you know, what was your favorite part? And he's like, well, in the beginning, when the guy did the segue, and I was like, what else did you like? And then he named like other parts, and it was clear he watched the whole thing and actually liked it. And I was like, oh, now I'm a jerk.
Yeah, that's really good.
Yeah.
It's funny when you do indie films, it's like you never quite know if people saw your movie or think they saw your movie.
I mean, just make sure you have a good trailer, and then that's that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. You know? Can he name all the trailer moments?
No, because we didn't even. I hadn't sent. My managers haven't seen my trailer, to my knowledge. Maybe they do. I don't know.
Hmm.
We're meeting with them next week. We're having drinks. So there's a lot to catch up on.
Yeah. So walk us through that. Actually, so you've got new representation. Like that's a great big step. Like, in 2 years, that's phenomenal, right?
Yeah. You think? Yes, it is. I'm being positive.
It is. 100%.
That's a new year, new me.
But also, it's like nice to kind of start the year with like.
True.
Yeah.
I have like a, you know, 6 meetings already next week. It's just like,
are you serious?
Yeah.
Oh, with who?
Paramount, Sony, Original Films, Blumhouse.
Never heard of any of these people.
Yeah.
You know, what's cool about Corinne is I love my manager. She worked with like another guy who's one of the partners at this company because it's not huge. It's like a mid-level one. And he also kind of reps. So they both are setting me up on meetings. And he's like, you know, middle-aged white guy. And she's like early 30s, but she worked at Bad Robot. So she came from a different, come up on a desk or whatever. She worked in development and at Film Nation, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So she has just like a different kind of cool background.
By the way, for our listeners that don't know what coming up on a desk means.
Thank you. It's confusing.
So if you work for an agency, a big agency, a CAA, UTA, one of those, you can, the kind of traditional old school way to do it. Gersh, you can start in the mailroom and like literally be like a floater, like some agent needs an assistant.
Literally everyone starts in the mailroom. Like you could be like, oh, I have a degree from Harvard Law, and you start in the mailroom.
Really? There's no way to start on a desk.
You start as a floater. In the mailroom.
I thought you could start on
a desk.
What
if like your uncle is like an agent? You can't be there.
You start in the mailroom, you get moved up fast, but like everybody starts in the mailroom. That's my understanding at least.
Maybe. So I everyone could be, can say, I started in the mailroom. And you're
Because
like,
you, that's the
and
way
they,
you learn
now they have females in there
and stuff like that.
Thank God.
Yeah, right. Everyone has like a master's degree.
A female room. It's a
female room.
Oh, I got it. It's a pun, guys.
Waka waka waka.
Oh, I get it. Yeah, male room, female room.
It went over my head too.
Well, not surprised.
what else is new? But yeah, I want to say I don't fucking actually know, so I don't want to misspeak. But most people start in the mailroom,
and so they work somehow. They get onto a desk, and they're someone's assistant, and they meet everyone because they are fielding all the phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like it's training of like how you're meant to act as an agent and like how deals are made. You're listening in on every single phone call, so it's a really specific boot camp basically. And then
but it is a real businessy side of Hollywood,
so
I don't know of a lot of directors that have kind of come up through the agency desks.
I mean, you eat a lot of shit.
Minhal, who you should also have on the show, but she just made her second feature through Will Smith's production company. I think it's like $1 or $2 million. It's like a pretty big job, you know.
Cool.
And she worked at ICM, I think, too.
Oh, okay.
Interesting.
But it's kind of different. But she knows a lot of people. She worked that network.
And you just, you understand in a way that we don't get, you know,
like. I'm still learning. Yeah. I'm like, what?
Honestly, I don't think I'll ever know. No. You know, like, I'll just be like, oh, well, I wore blue to CAA and apparently that's a no-no. You know?
Yeah.
I think it took me like 5 years in LA to know what rolling calls meant.
Yeah.
Like, I hear people say that all the time. And I have no idea what they're referring to.
I'm glad that you do say that kind of stuff on the show, because I've listened and when you take a moment to explain things, because I didn't know till I lived here, and I kind of wish I would have known some of these things. Like, I just didn't know what rolling calls was either.
Yeah, sure. So rolling calls is when, stop me if I'm misquoting this or mis-explaining this, but my understanding is basically like, oh, someone just slots out a little bit of time, an executive or an agent, and says, okay, like, they've got the list of people that they owe a call to. So they're just going to go ahead and go down the list, and their assistant is going to just like dial people, and they're just going to like, you know, jukebox through all of the calls, basically.
Yeah. Something that is so weird to me still to this day is like, I'll be on the phone with Jacob, my manager, who has been on the podcast, and we'll talk. We'll be like, how are the kids doing? Went on this trip. This was funny. Oh my God, my kid got sick. Like this and that. Yes, I'm writing this thing. Anyway, you know, what time do you think I should have that like email to you by? And then Jacob will say like, Josh, what time did we tell him?
Yeah. Uh-huh. You'll be like, wait, what?
Be like, Josh, you're on the line.
Yeah, I know.
Like, yeah. And I literally, like, probably five times have been like, is Josh on the line every time we talk? Because he's calling.
Yes.
It looks like it's coming from
but
his
cell
phone.
But they never say anything. So it's weird. But yeah, like, her assistant is Andrew. And she's like, Andrew, can you write that down? And I'm like, I was saying some personal stuff there.
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
Anyway.
I always be nice to the assistants.
Oh, right. I'm so nice to them. They probably think I'm like phony
they like
or something.
Because they get shit on too much. You know, like they're the first ones there. They're the last ones to leave. They have to
they're
go
so
do
nice.
Drinks and stuff as well. Most of them aren't going to get to be an agent. Like,
it just breaks my heart.
Carlin's sad over
but here. I am. It's just so hard.
Look,
what we do.
No, because they get a glimpse at what it's like to be an agent.
That's
and they decide
true.
If that's the type of person they want to be.
But the heartbreaking one is when someone thinks they want to be an agent and either the opportunities doesn't arise, right? Because there's only so many slots, right? Like, there's literally only so many desks. And so, like, even getting out of the mailroom is it's a lot of, like, luck because that spot has to open up, right? But then agencies have a very specific culture and each, like, from each agency, it's very specific.
Mm-hmm.
And, like, most people aren't cut from that cloth.
Thank God. I mean, it's like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're hardcore. They're
hardcore.
They're not... When I was younger, I thought that they were people who took advantage of artists or you know, you think of like a bloodsucker, right? And they are sharks. They are really capable of sensing opportunity and leaping on it. They're no nonsense. But they also love movies. That's
mm-hmm.
the weird combination of like, oh, they love supporting artists and helping artists and yes, also making money for artists.
Hey, we like making money too.
Sure.
Yeah.
And we are bad at it.
Yes.
That's why we need them. Like if I had a legal degree, I'd still be like, it's fine. You know?
Yeah. I don't really think of them as taking advantage of artists, but
they're not. Yeah.
But I think their position requires them to be result oriented.
Mm-hmm.
And if an artist that they work with hasn't, you know, provided any results in a year, they'll probably spend a lot less time on them the second year, and then they'll drop them the third year.
Right. So what you're saying is I have 8 more months.
No, you probably have like a year and a half.
Yeah, you're in the honeymoon spot too.
Mm-hmm.
Like right now, like all of those meetings that are getting set up, they're excited for you. And like,
yeah, it's cool.
And those are good meetings. I mean, I've had a couple
good
meetings,
meeting,
but not
like Disney. They've been sending me, I think it's because this like, maybe because she worked in development. I don't know.
I think there's that, and I think that there's, people want people like you to be directing stuff.
I have been meeting with a lot of women, unsurprisingly. And it has actually been pretty heartening to see women like junior execs or like kind of mid-level execs who are like dying to tell women's stories and people of color stories. And I'm like, thank you, like, for fighting for us.
Yeah.
You know, there's not that many, but the ones that are there are like fighting tooth and nail. And I am very excited about that.
It's like perfect timing for you. Right, like you're ready.
I think in 10 years it'd be even better. No, I know. Thank you.
Yeah, no, you're ready. You're totally ready. Like, you'll have a TV show so soon.
I hope so. My mother is very worried.
Well, tell her to.
Carlin's mom.
Tell her to relax, okay?
Carlin's
She's
doing
like, I'm just worried. You won't have time to have
G,
a family.
Great.
And I'm like, let's just pump the brakes.
You got it.
Family is
y'all write my
overrated.
No.
Oh.
Tell her to listen to this podcast.
She doesn't know what a podcast is. Yeah, she lives in Skeen, Texas. Yeah. Internet podcasts.
That is offensive. How did your Disney meeting go? What did you say to them? Did you pitch them any ideas?
I did pitch them a couple ideas and then forgot sort of what how specific the Disney brand is.
Oh,
and was
right.
Like, oh yeah, they're not interested in my sex ed story, right? It's Disney. But what's cool about Disney is like they have all these properties, right?
Yeah,
so
like
they're
Fox.
Pretty, yeah. Oh, right, like Fox. So they're pretty open to hearing like different takes on things. And I also pointed out a few characters that I love that I was like, I want to make an Ursula movie who's a drag queen. Again, mm-hmm. not exactly
sure,
the Disney
sure.
brand, but...
But they know that also.
But
they're like,
that.
Yeah, that's a cool idea. We wish we could do that.
Yeah.
We like Carlin.
And you I have some mean? Friends who have done Disney stuff, so that's kind of cool. Because like my friend David Lowry is one of their like favorite directors. And mm-hmm. so they're like, oh, you know Dave.
So are you interviewing to... pitch their, specific new IP or it's just a general
that was
just
a
like,
general yeah but what's cool about Disney I don't know if other studios do this but they bring in writers for like these round tables
mm-hmm.
so they sometimes I feel like my managers are positioning me to like be up for those jobs because you get paid really well mm-hmm. to come in for a day or two and pitch ideas on existing scripts
mm-hmm.
which is a cool way I think to like get in the room more
yeah that's interesting
and get paid
yeah I know some people are a little more antagonistic towards those roundtables. But also, like, yeah, Carlin is shrugging. I'm shrugging along as well.
I don't know. Right? I mean, this was from the Disney exec's point of view, so of course she thinks
sure.
it's a great opportunity.
Well, I think it's cool. I've done that in advertising, too, like where we'll bring, like, 10
mm-hmm.
young, interesting people in and be like, hey, we have to come up with, like, a way
totally.
To make whatever. Antacid's cool, like,
let's do it.
Yeah. And acid rap song, whatever.
I also like that she was like, we also have great lunch, sometimes sushi. And I was like, you get sushi for lunch?
Yeah. The commissary over at Disney is pretty nice too, actually.
It's just cool.
Just
it's
like slumming it.
I guess the cool thing about, you know, all of this and going on meetings is like, just walking, just having your name on. I know we've all been like, at meetings on the lots and stuff, but like to have your name on a list.
Sure.
And
oh, it
just
feels
to
good.
Go, yeah. And you see the posters and you're like, I'm
yeah,
here.
Yeah.
Like, this is where our movies are
yes,
made.
Yes, I would like a bottle of water.
Yes, I would like a cap. You have a cappuccino machine?
Okay.
I'll take one of those.
Thank you.
You know?
Yeah. So if you're listening to this podcast and you want to get onto the Paramount lot, just go there next week and tell them your name is Carlin Hudson and they should let you in.
That's right.
Wow.
They're like, oh, come on. Oh, Ms. Hudson, we're so happy to see you. Come on in.
Yes.
So let's talk about trajectory a little bit, right? So have you had the chance to sit down with your team and like say, this is what we want 2018 to be? Or is that forthcoming?
That's on the 7th, the 16th. Yeah, because I have like a series that, you know, the one I talked about,
the
distance.
The long distance one.
Yeah, which is done now. But we want to find like hopefully find a partner to release that with mm-hmm. us. Because it's like honestly, it's really good. We've been having test screenings and it's just exciting to direct things or direct something. You're like, oh shit, I would watch this.
Yeah.
You know, which like I have directed things that I wouldn't necessarily want. But this
sure,
one feels like, oh wow, this is good.
Or
and
even
new.
Like, oh, this is a good commercial, but who wants to watch
right,
commercials?
Right.
Right.
But this feels like a couple of the episodes I was like, oh, I'm just so proud of them.
Yeah.
And so helping them make a plan for that and then like I'm writing a couple features right now and just, you know, that kind of stuff.
So what, when you sit down with them, what's the top of the list? What do you want?
I don't know. What do I want to, I need.
That's a hard question, right?
Yeah. It's funny. This past year was one of my slowest financial directing years.
Mm-hmm.
So part of me thought that like this year I was like, I'm going to make more money this year. But actually I'm like, that's not really my goal anymore. I want to keep making stuff that I care about and keep developing my own work because I don't have control over who hires me to direct.
Right.
But I do have control over what I can write and develop.
Yeah.
And so that feels like a goal to me.
Right. But is there like any focus where you're like, I'm going to write something that feels like an HBO show so that I can get a job directing an HBO show?
No, but there is a movie that I'm writing with my boyfriend who's also a comedy writer that feels pretty commercial and would certainly be, it's a commercial comedy. And that's kind of exciting because it feels like we could maybe sell this. I'd love to direct it, but I don't know. That one feels more like more of a sample for bigger budget projects, perhaps.
Right.
I
so there
know.
Isn't like a clear, I'm going to do this, make this, and get this job type of...
No.
Like, I guess if you wanted to get...
Do you have that?
I do, but it changes like every single day.
Right.
That's the problem.
The thing to think about, though, is you're the overall point of like, yo, directing is hard. We all know that, right? Like, that's the thing that we've all taken on. And so looking at this new year, what are the next steps? What are the things to do to create your own future and create your own career and curate your own career? I think for me, it's got to be a feature this year. Basically, because like, you know, no number of great digital series or like awesome short films are gonna break through, basically. Like, they will to a small extent, but like, not having a feature is just such a huge part of the puzzle that it's like,
yeah,
it would be foolish to be like, why aren't things, you know, getting better and without one, basically.
Like we've talked about, I mean, my feature, I feel like most people actually don't watch it, but just the fact that I've made one checks a box, and I've made a feature and moving on.
Yeah, totally. So yeah, that's the thing that I'm focusing on this year, which is good funny because I feel like all of my scripted series are like going great, basically.
The ones you're pitching. Yeah.
Yeah.
Because that's, you know, people are buying that stuff right now. I wish that I wanted to write more of those, and I will, but I just am like in this like love affair with features at the moment and having so much fun writing them.
I mean, it's that's wonderful, and it's weird because, you know, we all are of the age where growing up, like, nobody wanted to make TV because TV was very bad. Like, The Sopranos came out when, like, we were in high school-ish, give or take. I don't know. I didn't have HBO. I wasn't watching it, right? So, like, that's kind of the beginning of good television. Before that, it was kind of like, well, of course you want to make movies because you want to make good art.
Yeah.
Right? And I feel like, basically, since college have wired my story skills to be more serialized. And so for the first time in kind of a while, I'm like, oh, I need to like tell one story, not five seasons.
I think I'm kind of more with Carlin, where I feel like the feature, it's, you have like a three acts and, you know, beginning, middle, and end. And I mean, whatever, we talked about this already, but there's a billion resources that are like, this is how you structure a feature. But there's like no real resources of like how you structure your TV show, you know, because you're trying to structure an amazing pilot where you teach everyone everything in like half an hour and do an example of an episode. And you're also trying to structure an entire season that should very much solve some mystery, answer questions, but also be open-ended.
Yeah.
So you can have more seasons, whether it's one more season or seven more seasons, you have to be ready for both. I think you've seen... there was a time when you would make this awesome short film, and based on just your directing of that short film, you can get an episode of TV or something. I think now that short film, hopefully you can turn it into a feature or a TV show. Like that there's some value in the content beyond just who directed it.
It's easier to make a short film. Like, we've all seen so many awesome short films, and you don't have to go to a film festival to see them anymore or like have an agent send them to you. Like, you just Vimeo.com and you're looking at an infinite number of incredible short films. So you just have to stand out in additional ways, which, you know, I think has been the thesis of the show, right? It's not just shoot it, but like just shoot something awesome.
Well, Can you change the name?
No, I mean, I would disagree with Matt on that. To me, it's making stuff is more important than worrying about how good it is.
Yeah, that's true. But what I'm saying is that you have, it has to be awesome.
Well, if it's not, then make another thing.
True. But to create your own opportunities, I'm saying, like, it's got to be a show that Carlin is super proud of. You know what I mean? Like, that's the thing that breaks you, and that's the thing that like everybody here and everyone on the show basically continues to benefit from, is the awesome things that you make. Your point is like, if you're precious about it, you're never going to make the awesome thing because you don't have enough practice or craft to get even close.
Yeah, I mean, it's a Robert Rodriguez thing, right, where he's like, I made 100 short films before I made Desperado. Or, you know, Malcolm Gladwell, the 10,000 hours thing. It's like, making things is the practice. It's like writing. It's like, right, everyone's like, if you want to be a writer, write. So it's that. And with directing, you know, filmmaking, it's the same thing. Like, you can't just dream of being a filmmaker. You have to make films. Well, Carlin, it sounds like you have a lot of awesome things going on.
It's really interesting. Year two, you have like a textbook year two, right?
Oh, really?
Well, I mean, a dream one, right? Like getting good representation, like working a decent amount, and now you're like at the precipice of like the next chapter.
Mm-hmm.
Things were a little foggy in terms of like specifics of what you want, but like up is the direction, right?
Yeah, I think, I mean, if my long-term goals are pretty clear, I think
it's
directing TV, writing and directing my own features and TV. You know, that's it. I'm sure that's all three of our
goals.
If those are the goals, like, would you still do commercial stuff?
Nah. I didn't do much commercial stuff this past year.
So you're not...
I only did two.
You're not, like, pursuing that in any way?
I am because I need to pay the bills and before I direct TV, you know. But what's cool, I mean, what's so different about the LA market is that these digital series that y'all have been doing that I've been up for, like, they don't exist in Austin. Austin has Rooster Teeth. Mm-hmm. That's it. They don't hire women. Hope they're listening.
Yeah,
they need to change that.
I worked for them.
Yeah, exactly.
Sorry.
Well, you're the right, but you also have the right, like, resume for them. You're probably too good for them, but clearly I love that company. but anyway, so they did, it's just a different market, so... I like being here, too, because I would rather direct a narrative digital series than a commercial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I like doing commercial stuff, but I never really quite, like, I needed, if I want to really do commercials, I have to hone in on, like, the exact thing that I do.
Like the genre.
And, yeah, and I'm a little too broad right now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, that's interesting. Like, I feel like doing the show has helped me realize, like, oh, I do, like, dialogue-driven comedy.
Yep.
Yeah, and because Matt and I... have been up for a lot of the same jobs.
Yeah, you have to specify a little bit.
I have like worked over the past 2 years to figure out like on when you would hire Matt versus when you would hire me. And I do think if it's like a comedy dialogue thing, I feel like
you
go to Matt, even though that's like the genre that I work in also. But to me, if it's like a little more like
driven.
action comedy or just a little more. To me, like, the worst thing is, like, a two-shot and, like, two overs, you know?
Yeah.
So maybe dialogue comedy isn't...
No, but then there's, like, a Geico commercial or Edgar Wright-style stuff. Not that Matt wouldn't do that, you know? Or not that I wouldn't do just, like, two guys in a living room talking about a football game or something. So I don't think we're going to come to a conclusion as to what all our goals are, but I think it's been a kind of interesting glimpse into a director that moved from a smaller market to L.A. and what... you know, your opportunities have been and meetings you've had.
I mean, I could go on and on, but I don't want to bore y'all. I mean, it's also like I have the opportunity since I'm a woman to be a part of all these programs.
Yeah, cool. Like the...
Yeah. I was a finalist in 5 last year.
Yeah.
5 of the freaking diverse director things. No, 3 and then 2 grants. So I feel like this might be... I might get one this year. I feel like 2018 is going to be the year that I get in one of these programs.
Oh, wow. Did you go for DWW?
Yeah, I was a finalist in that too and didn't get it.
You didn't get it? I feel like you'd be like...
Well, thank you. It's my first year.
Were you waitlisted or no?
No, they only let 7 to 8 in. So it's interesting. Like hundreds apply. I think 60-ish get to the second round. And then I made it to the last round, which is 20-ish.
Mm-hmm.
And they pick 7 to 8.
And you apply with a script?
Yeah, with a short film script.
Okay, so that's a big part of...
I think so, but from what I hear...
It's political.
Well, not only that, but I don't know anyone who's ever gotten in that didn't apply multiple times.
Sorry, just to back up and remind listeners, DWW Directors Workshop for Women. I talked about it last year when I went to a screening. It's a great program, very prestigious, highly competitive.
It's through AFI.
It's tuition free.
Yeah,
it's a year long program. You do a few workshops and like 1 month long workshop, and then you make a short film.
Right.
Pretty rad.
It's pretty rad. I mean, I'll apply next year, and then I think if I don't get it next year, maybe I move on.
Have you gone to the screenings?
No. I'll go this year.
Yeah, it's fun.
It's like getting into a preschool. You gotta like start schmoozing with everyone involved.
All about the preschools.
Yeah. I mean, it's of course it's political, and they also, you know, they want a diverse group of people, both in like age, race, whatever, sexual orientation, but they also need a diverse group of scripts and projects. Mm-hmm. So like I apply with a comedy script. Maybe there's a bunch of who knows?
Yeah.
It was the interviews were tough. I mean, like I went out of there like, oh shit. I was prepared, but I just didn't. It was
what's
rough.
Like a tough question that you were asked?
Well, they were just kind of like they had read through all your stuff, and they'd be like, well, one woman, my worst one was she was like, yeah, I don't think this is interesting
about your script.
Yes.
Oh my goodness.
And I was like, wow, is this a test? Sure. What do I say? What
do I say to that? Yeah.
Or no, not interesting. She said, I don't think this is, I said, I want to make this short because I think it's, it does have a really specific tone. It's a comedy, but it's like pretty dry and like, but stylized. And it's just a unique sort of, I thought, script. And the film was like, yeah, I don't see what's unique about it. And I was like, cool. Yeah, it's not for everyone. Nothing is for everyone. You know, we all have...
Yeah, right.
So there were some questions like that that I was just kind of like, wow, this person hated it. The couple women really seemed to love the project.
Wow.
It was intense.
Well, I feel like you will get it. Something unless amazing. You get like a TV directing job before that and then you don't have to worry about it.
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a narrow window also, right? It's a narrow window. Like once you start working in the big time, you're not eligible anymore.
Yeah, but I mean, it was interesting because I, again, like 20-ish make it to the last round and I knew eight women. I knew almost half of them because they were my peers. You know, I'm like, oh, there's this woman who was up against this job with me. Here's three other film vitals. That's like lady feature director group. So it was, yeah. And also women who were like in their 40s and 50s. Yeah. You know, it's like...
Which is rad, I think.
Yeah, which is rad. But it's also, it just goes to show... Everyone, especially women, you know, we're just so desperate for opportunity. And there's these few, you know, so you're just like all people who've made four features are up for these programs.
Yeah.
Can I tell you, when I interviewed at AFI, like the question that sideswiped me the most, it's so dumb, but they just asked me what my favorite movie was. And I was like, don't say Fight Club.
No, it's okay to say Fight Club.
Just make sure people don't say Fight Club.
It's okay.
The listener should know not to say Fight Club.
I
mean,
I was like, well, there's so many great movies out there.
Well, there are.
Yeah. I was like, I just saw this movie that I really liked, this Gus Van Sant film, Elephant. And they're like, oh, do you know why it's called Elephant? And I was like,
No.
Is there an answer to that? And they're like, yeah, it's based on this old like 1930s film or something called Elephant that was about a story from different perspectives about an elephant or something. I was like, oh, how would cool. a human being know that?
Yeah.
Read film
That's
comic.
Why I didn't need to go to
Well, I yeah, it's funny because those interviews, I've been doing all these generals and I was like, I am great in a room. Like, I can be relaxed. And then these people just extremely pointed questions. And I was like, oh, okay. Yeah.
It's fun. You got to do like a few of those interviews to get good at them.
Yeah.
Know? Yeah. I feel like I'm always like, guys, can we get one of the crappier rooms first? Like, let's warm up a little bit.
Yes.
Like, don't put a big fish in the first lineup.
Yes. That woman was the second person I talked to out of like nine.
Yeah.
I thought, this is going well.
What do you say when people ask you what your favorite movie is?
Oh.
In a room, not at a party, but like in the environment that Orange
is. Depends what I'm talking to and what I'm pitching.
Mm-hmm. That's the right answer, right?
Okay. They just so there's like the film school people, which you kind of want to get a little in the weeds, right? Like something, you don't want to say Wonder Woman or whatever, right?
Yeah.
But then there's, Fox or something, right? That you're...
I think it's okay to say not Wonder Woman because it's so recent. Mm-hmm. I think you could say like...
Election.
Yeah.
Straight. I love Election.
Okay,
all
well...
Right. Questions, yeah.
Let's get to some listener questions. We only are going to do two, but they are voicemails. So here is the first question.
Hello, this is Andy again. On the last episode, you answered my question on screenwriting, and it was super helpful. I had another question, if you don't mind me repeat asking questions. I'm in an interesting situation. I got my MFA in film directing, and then I got married to a guy in the Air Force, and he's super supportive, but we move around a lot. The chances of us ending up in L.A. anytime soon is not exactly plausible. So I was wondering what recommendations you'd have for an indie filmmaker that's on the move, whether it be connecting with local people wherever I go that are into filmmaking, focusing mainly on screenwriting. Can you kind of screenwrite from anywhere, or do you have to start out in LA as a screenwriter and then you can start from anywhere? So a lot to work with there, but if you have an answer for that or a direction, that would be awesome. Especially if I'm traveling internationally or wherever we're going to end up, because that's military life. Thank you. And thanks for answering my question on the last show.
It's a pretty good question, right?
Yeah.
Not an easy answer. So thanks, Andy, for leaving us a voicemail. We love them. two voicemails from Andy. Thank you, win most voicemails. But yeah, what do you guys think? I think it's...
Yeah, but that's tricky, right? I guess I don't really know enough about how long you're stationed at any given place. Do you guys know that?
I think it's a couple years, usually.
Yeah,
it depends probably, on branch of the military, perhaps?
Yeah, that's
Air Force.
Right.
Air Force.
But, right. But I'm assuming it's different depending on your rank and what you do. I guess just to randomly start answering questions and take everything with a grain of salt because we're kind of guessing here a little bit. But I do think screenwriting you could do from anywhere. Mm-hmm. You know, there's two parts to that. There's the writing of the screenplay and then there's the like getting it to people and meeting people and getting it read. I've met a lot of people that write not in LA and they'll come to LA for a week and try to set up a bunch of meetings. I think that totally works. In LA, there's something easier about being a writer here because everyone's talking about writing all the time. But that doesn't mean anything. I think you have all the resources you need anywhere in the world.
Yeah. The act of writing isn't the hard part in this circumstance because, you know, you just need a laptop. You can do it wherever. It's getting read. That's the hard part, right?
Yeah. But you can do, I mean, obviously you can do it remotely to some degree and you can set up meetings. You can pitch people, you can enter competitions. I know it's controversial to some people, but I think the good ones, you know, if you win like Nichols or whatever, Austin, like you, people read your stuff. They don't care where you live. You can email Kate Grady at Adaptive, a log line, sure, and see if she's into true. It. Like there are avenues to do stuff remotely. In terms of filmmaking, I mean, you know, Austin is not exactly a tiny film market. It's like probably in the top 10 in the US. But you know, you can make stuff wherever you're at.
Yeah, if she's at a place, say I have a friend who's married to a guy in the Navy and like they were in this kind of remote Georgia town for 2 years. But that's the kind of place where like you can get people to work on your movie
you could probably get like a million free extras.
Shoot anywhere.
Shoot in the most beautiful places.
Yes.
Many years ago went on tour with Keith Urban as like one of the camera operators. And it was like shocking. So when you go on tour, like with a band from like venue to venue, you know, you're on a tour bus and you work during the day and you sleep in the tour bus and it drives you to the next venue while you're sleeping. And then you wake up, you like shower at the venue and you have the day off until the concert. And I was always shocked that nobody that is on tour, especially there's all these tech people and camera people, and you're like in a community of like hundreds of people traveling together with like unlimited resources. Like, why nobody set a TV show that takes place on a music tour, you know? Because I had access to like the Staples Center, like totally empty. I could go anywhere and shoot anything and do anything. Like,
wow.
And backstage everywhere. You know, we were in Wisconsin and we were in like Nashville and we were everywhere. So I think if there is like a way that you could do a show that takes place, you know, on an Air Force base and you have soldiers and you have airplanes and you have houses, you know, there is a way to do that. It's a big undertaking, but you could do, it depends on what kind of stuff you like. If you like kind of a doc style look, you know, you can kind of embrace that, and getting a camera and a sound person is not that hard. You can do it yourself. You know, so I think there's opportunities that, you know, it's a little bit of an uphill battle.
That's such a unique situation that I'm like, write from your point of view and like write about your life, because that's something that I'm like, what's that like?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I think that's right on. And I guess the thing that to me, I feel like you should be making things as often as possible in those shifting environments, because the thing that I'm worried about for you, Andy, is like having the relationships to get a thing read, or rather not having them in a larger market, makes things challenging. And I don't want you to be held back by that. Right. So like having an awesome short film or even a indie feature with this crazy sort of environment and point of view that Carlin's describing, like that's undeniable in a way that like it would be easy to, it's easy to ignore a script. So I feel like, my money's on go make it, right?
Yeah, as much as you can, and show it to people and email people.
Yeah.
Yeah, go make a short film for sure. Because wherever you're going to be is going to be somewhere more interesting than shooting on Sunset Boulevard to me.
Yeah, no doubt.
And
yeah.
don't try to make it feel like a Hollywood thing. Right. Make it feel as genuine to where it is. You know.
Make a Florida project every 3 years. You know what I mean? Like great for wherever film. You're living. Yeah.
There are 4 Air Force bases in California.
San Diego is a big one, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So, yeah, I mean,
I think San Diego has the best weather in the world.
The other thing,
San Diego weather is incredible.
Is, you know, maybe sell that screenplay and then just convince your husband to move to California with you, and he can he can be an Air Force script consultant.
And he could be like Adam Driver.
Yeah, that's true.
He was in the military. Yeah. Adam Driver.
Yeah, I think it was. Marine, I think he was a Marine.
I think so, but I do not know for
I'm
sure.
I'm not sure. That's
but
a,
isn't
that's
that
a
fascinating?
Guess.
He was like in the Marines.
I imagine a lot of people were in the military, don't you think?
But I mean, like a movie star. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah, I would think
Darth
so.
Darth Vader Jr.
Yeah, I know who Adam Driver is. No.
I just thought it was fun to call him Darth Vader.
I mean, back in the 50s, every actor was in the military.
True. Gal Gadot. Just kidding. Everyone has to be in the military.
Gal Gadot.
Yeah.
Anyway, okay. Well, thanks, Andy. Hopefully helpful in some way. But yeah, let us know.
Andy, also, if you're trying to make money, I wonder, Carlin, I think you can speak to this best. It's hard to get in. The thing you're worried about is like, oh, you're getting into a film community and then all of a sudden you have to leave, right? It takes a little bit of time to get that mojo working, right? But that being said, there are like small markets with commercial opportunities. If you were in Andy's position, do you think it's worth it to try and do commercial work on the side to make some scratch or just focus on...
I would focus on developing work.
I mean, it depends what kind of... If she wants to direct commercials...
Then, yeah.
It's actually, that's something I totally didn't think about, but if you did, if you are into that and you made some regional commercials or just approached businesses, I mean, you know, Rhett and Link, they like got famous off their like local commercials they made.
Oh, yeah.
It could be an interesting opportunity too. So yeah, take your limitations and turn them into your superpowers. Next question. Very similar to Andy's question. Here it goes.
Hi, my name is Kip Adler, K-I-P-P Adler. I'm calling from Tel Aviv, actually. And first of all, I really liked your guys' podcast. I didn't go to film school. I'm learning a lot through it, listen to it. Appreciate your guys' honesty. So anyway, yeah, like I said, I'm from Israel, and there's a really nice film scene here. The way it kind of works here is things are a bit more go with the flow. That's the Middle East, after all. But I ended up getting a gig. I'm directing documentaries for American television, and I have my own production company, Madler Media. I do web commercials. I've done comedy sketches on my own stuff, all sorts of stuff. So I've kind of done the avant-garde route. And like I said, things are more free-flowing here, and I'm wondering, because I'm planning on moving to America within a couple of years, making moves, and I wanted to know, like, if you have any recommendations for how to properly build a portfolio or what exactly to do to get noticed there. I'm not sure if I'll end up in L.A. or New York or somewhere in between, but definitely want to get jobs, in the film industry or at the very least, marketing and commercials and things like that. Just keep up what I'm doing now. So, yeah. Oh, and my I don't use Twitter so much, but my Instagram handle is at Kip Adler, K-I-P-P-A-D-L-E-R. I'm pretty active on Instagram and not on Twitter. Anyway, thanks a lot, guys. Appreciate it.
So that was Kip Adler from Israel. I just want to do a quick shout out, say that I am also from Israel, also from Tel Aviv. I lived there till I was 5 years old.
Kip, your Instagram is dope. You're making Oren look bad.
Oh, man, you have a good Instagram.
It's pretty good.
I've also been to your website that has cool things. What was interesting is there's some commercials on there, madlermedia.com, that I think are like for American companies, but to me as an Israeli, they kind of look like they're shot in Israel. Because, Israelis can kind of, they look like anyone.
Mm-hmm.
But there's like just like little hints in the set design and the looks of all the extras and stuff that you're like, oh, I think this was shot in Tel Aviv, even though it's for like a Bay Area company.
Huh.
So Kip's question is a little different from Andy's in that he is planning on moving to the U.S., right? And he wants to know what to do, how to prepare.
Well, and it's funny. I have a couple friends who had similar issues, basically, where I had a DP friend who had like a dope career in Dubai, and then we started in London, moved to Dubai, and then now is here in the States. And like, his campaigns are awesome. Like, it's all the biggest companies. It's like sports cars and Coke and everything. But it doesn't seem Western. Mm-hmm. And so even though it's premium stuff, right. He's found
it's like there's
it challenging.
Seven Lamborghinis in this shot.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, in the U.S., we would only use one.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's on the nose.
And so it's been an interesting challenge for him, actually. And a buddy from who shot a while in Morocco as well.
Yeah, I mean, I just, this isn't, on an emotional level, I would say to Kip that no matter where you come from, when you move to LA or New York, you're going to be new and it's going to be humbling. I've had a very humbling couple of years. And I, now looking back, I think it's been great for my personal growth. And it's been like, okay, this is what it's like to like kind of start from scratch and mm-hmm. have to hustle like I never had before. But to just be like kind to yourself and know that it takes time, because it will take time.
Yeah, for sure. I do wonder, like, based on very little I know about Kip, if New York might be a more interesting place to move to first, if he was more primarily interested in advertising. There is a big Israeli film community there, and, you know, they're advertising based, and they might, I think that it is a little bit more of a go with the flow attitude, and it's also a way more fun and easy and accessible city to move to when you are moving to a new city compared to LA. I think if you want to work in narrative film, like, LA is the place to go. But yeah, in terms of building portfolio, and we talked about this on the podcast before, but what I've done is I just like find directors that I want to have their careers, and I look at their portfolios and I try to see how they present themselves and, you know, see how I can take my work and present it in a similar way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I wonder, you guys chime in on this one, but to me, the thing that I'm nervous about for Kip is that, like, based off of my friends' experiences, you know, you want it to feel like, oh, it's of the place that you're shooting in, right? It's kind of the opposite of Andy's problem. Andy gets to travel all over the world and, like, ideally gets to evoke those different locations in her filmmaking. Kip, because he's specifically in one place that's not the States, when you move to the States, I'm worried that there will be a bias of, like, it not counting, right? So, like, what you're saying, it kind of, you have to start from scratch. So I've been racking my brain to think of, like, what are the things to do to, A, embrace being in Israel and, like, shooting cool stuff,
yeah.
right? And then also making sure that you don't get pigeonholed as a quote-unquote Israeli filmmaker. Do you know what I mean? Like, that you get stuck just doing, I don't even know what that would be exactly, but, like...
Yeah, I don't either. Oren?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I don't want to assume too much, but based on Kip's accent, he is American or...
Sure.
Yeah.
Canadian or something.
That's not what I'm
to
saying,
Israel.
No.
And so I don't think his sentiment or his even his, like, aesthetic is especially Israeli. I don't know, but from going to his website, Madler Media, it seems like a production company. You know, on the first page that you go to, it says, we'll make, you know, hand-picked, create a video boutique service all in your budget, what we offer, you know, your brand deserves quality video. It seems like it's not a director's website. Mm-hmm. It's a production company's website. And if you want to bring the production company to the U.S. and your whole team, that might be easier, especially if you, like, attack, like, San Francisco tech sector or someplace that is a little less competitive than, you know, Little Caesars commercials, 30-second TV commercials. If you want to come as a director, I would just make a totally new website and just have, like, your portfolio and just start, you know, trying to find gigs and maybe cutting your documentary stuff that you're shooting now into 30-second or 60-second spots.
And, like, what we were saying, like, or what I was saying about commercial directing is if he wants to do commercials, then finding that one thing that he does really well and making a portfolio that, like, if he does car, I don't know what he does, but whatever it is, like, honing in on that specific thing.
Right. Well, he said that he did, like, some documentary stuff for American companies. So I know that stuff is super in demand right now. Production company I'm at, they don't really have, like, a doc person, and they... Mm-hmm.
They're looking
for
kind of like lifestyle.
Actually, Carlin's done a good amount of that stuff.
I have done a lot of that stuff. But see, this is the thing. I do dialogue comedy, and I've done a lot of lifestyle doc stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. But looking at his website, he's done a lot of kind of tech company type things. I don't know if you guys know Sandwich Video. I think we've talked about them on the website. I think we've talked about them on the podcast, but they do a lot of that stuff. That might be a website to check out, Kip, to see. They're really successful to see kind of what they do and how they succeed here. But yeah, well, hopefully that was helpful in some way. Sometimes I feel like our listeners who are asking us questions are like, you did not answer my question. but at least we discussed it, and they're all very valid questions. So I think that's cool. Well, before we leave, should we endorse some things for
that's
free?
Right.
Unpaid endorsements.
Do you guys read that Ridley Scott interview that was making the rounds?
He's made a few. Hasn't he done a few lately that have made the rounds?
Well, he did replace an entire actor in his movie like over the course of a week. And then the new actor is getting amazing reviews, which is kind of insane.
Yeah. Yeah, that was wild.
Vanity Fair had an interview with Ridley Scott where they talk about, All the Money in the World and also Blade Runner. And just his career in general. And, that dude makes a movie a year. Alien is basically my favorite movie of all time.
He's 83.
He's 83?
And makes a motherfucking movie a year faster than any other Hollywood director under budget all the time.
Yeah, and big visual effects, like spectacular spectacles, the not biggest, like tiny movies.
So the thing that's so delightful about this interview is that he does not give a fuck. He's just like really brazen and open about like the mistakes that he's made and like why he's good at what he is or what he's good at. It's like it's the combination of being 83 and also making a movie a year for the last couple decades. So it's like a real delight of a read. And also I think there's probably a good number of little nuggets to pull out of it. But he was like, yeah, Blade Runner's too long. I fucked it up. It's my fault. And doesn't care. I mean, he cares because he wants to make good movies, but also is like a grandpa.
Yeah, that's awesome. I will read it. Okay, this is dumb. But I freaking love Southwest Airlines.
Me too.
I've been flying them all.
I love Southwest Airlines. I am like their biggest... Sorry, you're obviously the expert. I second this recommendation.
I've been flying them all winter break. So I was just in St. Louis a couple days ago, and I took an Uber ride from the house to the airport. And my Uber driver was telling me that he's coming out to L.A. And he's like, yeah, but the tickets were so expensive. It's like, how expensive? He's like, I don't know. It cost me like $380 for one way, but it was the only flight. And I have to fly through Phoenix, American Airlines. Oh, he was flying to San Francisco. And I was like, as he was talking, I was like looking it up on Southwest. I was like,
of course you were.
you could have flown directly from here on that date on Southwest Airlines for $270. And luggage is free, by the way. American Airlines is like $50 or something, or like $25 for your first luggage, $50 for your second. And they give you free snacks too and free drinks. And he got so upset. He was so angry. He was driving like 7 miles per hour on the freeway. I was like, okay, if it's Southwest, I mean, the luggage is free.
I love Southwest, yes.
So the two big things, the free luggage, which everyone used to have, and...
The big one, changing your dates.
Yes, you can change your ticket for free.
For free.
Yeah.
They put the money in your account. So it's like, say I have a $350 ticket that I don't use and cancel it. It's just in my account so I can use that credit for next time.
Yeah, they also have a really good credit card and free flyer mile program. The thing that a lot of people hate, and my father-in-law, he's like 6'6 or something, is there's not assigned seats.
Just pay $15 to get upgraded. That's what I do. You pay $15.
Oh, that's the hard way. What I did is I had a child. If you're traveling with a child under 6, you get to board at the latest between the A group and the B group.
Mm-hmm. Or, and I think what that means. Maybe having a child is a little harder than paying $15.
Oh, it was pretty easy.
Yeah, for you it was easy.
Tell you how.
Was like, look, I just...
I'll tell you how it works later.
Also, I interviewed... I did like some videos for Southwest.
Oh, really?
Years ago, like their corporate videos, and I interviewed like the CEO and like whatever. And they were so nice. I just like couldn't believe how nice they were.
Do you know
like,
what their stock ticker is?
No.
On the NASDAQ, it's LUV.
Yes. That's why it's like a LUV like love voucher. And that's so funny. They were just so nice, and they just were so like humble and like shook my hand. Thank you so much for coming. It was just I was just so charmed and thought this was already my airline, but now I'm really sold.
And a lot of times, like the flight attendants will like.
The comedy routines?
Yeah. I don't like that.
Okay, that made me
either. I dislike that, actually.
Those videos online,
it's
too.
Funny. Yeah. I liked them when I was, like, single, just traveling alone. But when it's, like, with my whole family and, like, baby screaming and everything, you're like, okay.
Yeah.
Yes, we know it's not your fault. It's the ass fault. Okay, get it. Like, many times.
I haven't heard that one. That's funny.
Carlin, you're into all of it.
Okay, Carlin, what have you been liking lately?
I was not prepared. My first thought was the stupidest, even stupider than that was. I got an Alexa for Christmas.
Oh, yes. Sure. I've been meaning to buy one. An Echo, right?
An Echo, but you say Alexa.
Yeah.
Obviously.
I say Alexa.
I just love it because I wake up, you know, and I like to listen to KCRW or like sure. NPR in the morning. So I can just, while I'm making coffee, can say, Alexa, play KCRW. And it starts playing.
Have you done the flash briefing?
No.
Flash briefing, it may be a little redundant for you, but it's like, here's like, you've got like 5 minutes, you're making coffee. And just gives you the rundown of like, here's the top news of the day and the weather.
That is amazing.
Yeah, Matt's like a big...
Okay.
That is the thing I use it for. That's it.
I also,
and setting kitchen timers.
I was just about to say, I cook a lot and I set a lot of timers.
Yeah, yeah, you're doing the dishes or whatever. It's like,
when I was in St. Louis, I was hanging out with like this family's kids, like a 3-year-old and a 7-year-old or something. And I was like, hey, Maddie, like, can you like blast some music in here or something? And she's like, yeah, Alexa, play Taylor Swift. And it just like played Taylor Swift.
Oh,
like,
you mean around a child?
Yeah.
Oh, my 3-year-old niece just goes, Alexa! Just like, yeah. She doesn't recognize it because she can't really say it totally, but it's, that's, I, with kids, I may not have one.
Yeah, I've...
They,
yeah. Oh, I think it's awesome. It's like...
They can, like, order things.
Until, yeah. Yeah. Or they figure out how to play...
We did have 40 American...
I want to have a for Christmas over and over
dolls.
And over again.
Oh, this is what happened to you?
Yeah. It's very cute for me. Those parents were like, Christmas is over!
Yep.
Well, anyway, sorry you guys hate children.
Not sure if anyone's heard of the Amazon Echo. I'm so glad I recommended this.
No, but it
putting it in the kitchen is a pro tip, though.
It's the kitchen where it's really, God, I love it.
And you know that if you buy the dots, you can drop in on another room. So if you have a family with children, you can put like the dot in their room and you can like use it as an intercom system.
I went a little crazy and I have two. My apartment is not big enough that I need two. And I'm actually a little disappointed with the way that they interface with each other. Because you think you set a timer on one and the other one's going to get it, or like they don't play as well together as you'd think they would. Actually,
and can you? I heard you can play music like on all of them, like the same song,
like
throughout
the
house
system or something.
I don't know. I've never done that before.
Yeah.
It's kind of like you have two. For me, at least, I haven't done a good job maybe of networking them, but it feels like, oh, there's just two different stupid machines that,
somehow,
you know.
We have a Sonos, a Google Home, and now a Echo.
Oh, you have a Google Home, too.
A small one.
Does your Sonos have Alexa built in?
I don't know. It's just, we got them all for free. You know, my boyfriend and I just like, it's a sort of a mess.
What do you guys steal them? What do you mean?
Yeah, no.
You're like, you know, my boyfriend and I, we get them
Carlin,
for free.
Carlin, your main tip, be a cat burglar.
Yes.
That is how you
survive. Be a cat burglar.
Wait, how'd you get them for free?
Because he works at a marketing place and like they always have like end of the year stuff to give away. And last year was a Sonos and this year it was a Google Home.
Wow.
But I wanted the
Echo. I'm dating the wrong person.
How'd you like that Sonos?
I like it.
Yeah.
It sounds better than the Echo, for sure.
Yeah.
But you can't talk to it.
That's
true. No, but they have a Sonos. So the Echo is like $100, but you can get the Sonos one. It's $200 and it's got Alexa built in. That's what our friends had.
It's a lot. I regret this recommendation.
Anyway, if we want to find out what you're up to, should we visit your website?
Just call me, I think.
What's your phone number? We'll put it in the show notes.
I really need to update my website, but...
You're on Twitter.
Ish. Yes, I have a Twitter handle. Hey Carlin.
Cool. CARLYN.
Yes. And then I think Instagram probably is good. Carlin Hudson is my... Instagram handle.
You know, I love an Instagram handle that has no underscore in it.
Mm-hmm.
No offense.
Or my website is carlinhudson.com.
There you go.
Cool. Well, you can find out more about the show at justshootitpod.com. You can see the show notes for this episode. You can find out what Matt and I have been up to. You can follow us on Instagram, on Twitter. We would love if you like our Facebook page. It's Just Shoot It Podcast. Leave us a voicemail at 1-262-6-SHOOT-1. You know, send us an email, justshootitpod@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you. Leave us an iTunes review. Sorry we're asking for so much. I guess the most important thing would be the iTunes review.
iTunes review.
You guys are really pushing those iTunes reviews.
Are we pushing them too hard?
I don't know.
It is the biggest thing. It is the way to push
it. It is the way. Yeah. And guess what our listeners are?
They're
not
they're
that
responding.
Great at leaving them.
Oh, they're not?
We've had a few. But
come on, guys.
We'd like more.
Help us out.
And yeah,
we're like
that's
the NPR Plut Trip.
This episode was edited by Jay McCullough, and our webmaster is Ewan Williams.
Music was provided by the Free Music Archive and the artist Jazar.
Bye.
Thanks, guys.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.